always right. I knew
no
that.
Phone
well,
calls.
I don't know.
No phone calls.
Hello everyone, welcome. We'd like to get started. Welcome to the November 19th Ways and Means Committee meeting. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Can we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everyone. Now he just walked out.
Oh, that's better.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Hey,
Amber.
Yes, call roll, please.
Archer?
Here.
Jarantine?
Yes.
Donaldson? Mayo?
Here.
Maloney? Petit? Wrong. Bartels?
Here.
Okay. We have a schedule, but we're going to take it out to try and accommodate folks' conflicts. So why don't we go ahead and start, we'll start with the Board of Elections. And
where would you like me to go?
Right here? Is that where you want them to go?
They never let me use the microphone. See how they took it away?
I want to make the motion, right? I make the motion. No worries. We're not voting. Okay, go ahead. Okay, please. Thank you.
Thank you for the courtesy of your time, and especially to accommodate. We're in the middle of a hand count right now, so I need to get back to the Board of Elections. Ashley couldn't be here. My understanding is she sent a letter that was distributed
yes.
to everyone. So I think the main request is for two additional clerks at the Board of Elections, given the new challenges that we've been presented with mandates from the state, as well, primarily mandates from the state. First and foremost, we've seen a huge uptick in mail processing through the Department of Motor Vehicles, as well as the new challenges presented by early voting. So, did anyone have any questions after reviewing the letter from Ashley?
A couple of questions.
Sure.
You gave us some information that was requested last night with regards to extra hours over and above normal.
Right.
Is this above any overtime?
Well, so no one at the Board of Elections is entitled to overtime.
Okay.
All of our staff are averaging about 18 days of comp time. I know that I have already exceeded the maximum allotted comp time, and there's no foreseeable end to working overtime at the Board of Elections, at least in the short term. We are going to be doing at least two races, hand count, between now and the end of December, and we're working on, you know, a huge foil related to the district attorney's race, and we're counting ballots there. So, and that process is going till 6 o'clock every night, minimum.
Yes, Tracy.
So, in terms of the comp time.
has provided, is that across how many positions? Is that across?
I was the one that provided it. It's over the 10 positions who are eligible. The election commissioners do not earn comp. So it's the other, I think there's 12 positions in elections, so it's the other 10.
Okay.
Can I follow on and just quick ask for
follow up? Is there a way just so that to provide in each of these how many, like, a per position?
I do have it by employee. I can bring it. I just gave you the totals. I can give you by position.
It might just set a more detailed picture, especially in the heavy months.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn?
Yes. To the election inspectors, the two directors, do they go over the threshold to get comp time? Because isn't it a state law if they work 60, 80 hours?
No, department heads get comp time.
Yeah, when it comes to the managers, it's just if they're over their 75 hours, it's comp time. They don't earn overtime.
The commissioners don't earn any.
The department heads don't
earn
comp.
Their salary.
For their hourly.
They get nothing.
Department heads get no comp time, no overtime.
Yeah.
Legislative guarantee.
A couple questions. First of all, this handout that was given out today, we have comp time that's about 50 hours more 2019 versus 2018, Jennifer, and that doesn't seem like a great deal. I mean, you're talking
there's about 50 hours for this year that's missing.
Year, more this year than last year.
Right.
So basically, I mean, so what are you actually asking
we're
for
seeing
in your resolution here, or amendment here? What are you actually, I mean, if it's really everything you're asking for, what are you asking for? More employees?
We really need two additional clerks to handle the incoming mail processing and to provide the leeway that we need scheduling. As we are taxing the employees that we have on both sides of the aisle at the Board of Elections. And I think, you know, there doesn't seem to be any light at the end of the tunnel. Going into 2020, we're looking at 30 election days, and mail processing is going to go up exponentially, given that it's in the presidential election year.
When you talked about this with the county executive and the finance department, what was your opinion of the effort they put into the budget for whatever reason?
It wasn't known at the time that this would occur, but just going back to your point that there's only 50 more hours, we're right in the middle of
November
election cycle. 2019 is going to go much beyond what 2018 was by the time it's all said and done. They're in the middle of, like the deputy commissioner just said, they're in the middle of hand counts. And much of the comp time will be earned
between now and the end of the year.
So the state, with all their graciousness, they're going to give us all the money to fund us for next year, right? They did this 2018 or 2019, they're going to give for 2020, right?
They bought equipment.
I sincerely doubt that.
Oh, really?
There are discussions with the state in terms of an allocation of unpaid expenses related to early voting, and we're working on those calculations. Those are due to the state on December 2nd. I mean, we were granted, I believe it was a little over $400,000, but when you count in the extra hours and all of the expenses related to early voting, that really didn't cover the full expense.
That didn't cover the employees during being present at the early voting place.
Correct. Yeah. And again, instead of having three election days next year, we now have 30.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Legislative Maloney?
It does look like it's 2 months. The 2 months we probably figured are the big, you know, so we're creating two positions, benefits and everything else, but year round I see literally half the year you didn't run a single comp time hour in half of the months of the year. So according to this pretty basic rundown, we're going to hire two full-time employees that are going to be, I'm sure I know you guys are busy, and every department is But it does look like for half the year you're going to have two extra staff, where it's literally 90% of the hours appear to be in 2 months. So it would be, I think it would be, it would make more sense to have staff during those months. You know, pay benefits. I've been talking about a couple of
times.
Yeah, they do that, and they did. You guys did just say that you had several people just retire, so you might actually have a bigger pool of people that don't need to be trained. Because that's one of the problems. If you're going to bring in somebody part time that hasn't worked there before, we're going to be wasting money. You know, it's you can't just.
On the other hand, don't they have to take the comp time? The problem is build up 278 hours of comp time.
When can anybody take a vacation or take those days? We have no relief.
And additionally, the calendar's changed, correct?
But in theory,
but Joe,
you wouldn't have as much comp time.
The calendar has changed. So when you're looking at comp time earlier in the year, it everything starts earlier now.
Yeah, but I'm looking at 19. And this was our first run at it.
Right, but then next year you're dealing with...
Three election cycles
versus...
As opposed to just this one round of early voting.
Yeah.
October, November is still, we're still going to have
what
75% October.
What I would also add is that, you know, there's going to be extra hours. We've, in the last season, we hired 100 new poll site inspectors, and we're probably going to be doing additional training, which is after hours as well, Saturdays and evening hours, because some of our long-term poll inspectors are really struggling with the new equipment and technology, and it does really require a higher level of expertise to handle some of the new equipment.
Certain times of the year, is there, do you have people coming in later starting to do an 8-hour day rather than a 12-hour day? Or, you know, we do a lot of that in the legislature. If people show up, they'll do it. If they know they're going to be here till late, they won't come until 12. Therefore, they're not. You know, I'm just wondering, have you looked at, are these comp hours, are we adjusting to avoid the comp hours? I mean, we should be trying to avoid these as much as we can, and I know you are. I'm just asking.
It's really, on many levels, challenging to do that at the Board of Elections, because if one person is out, then another person, like, for example, everything that I do is audited by my counterpart on the Republican side, so we would have to have exactly the same schedule. And there's so much work to do, I can't conceive of coming in late. I mean, I've been coming in, you know, usually 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning for months.
But so. He meant instead doing like a 12-to-8 shift instead of a 9.
And it wouldn't have to be you either. And I don't think trainings have to have a Republican and a Democrat. Some of these things that you do with the board elections don't have to have two people watching over. Somebody can train. You don't have to have a Republican and a Democrat.
You do.
You really? Even the training? Every single time?
You
training?
Do. Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the two people they're asking for. You can't just put
one. Oh, I understand why they're asking for two people. I was just wondering if every single taxpayer had to have two people. I know a lot of the stuff with oversight, you know, the state oversight.
Some of the work one person can do and the other person can audit and just, like, review that the work is done properly. But, you know, for the most part, it is really two people are required.
But you've never done any messed around with scheduling at all? Because a lot of departments do that. There's things that are happening later, like you said, trainings. I'd be curious to know how much you guys have done, trying to be innovative and play with the schedule when you can,
mm-hmm.
not just to fire. I'd love to see something on that you can at least try.
Okay, well, any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Leave this here?
Up there. Okay, we'll go back to... Yes.
I had asked a representative from RCAL, Anthony, to be here at 1. I did email him first thing this morning when I got the final agenda, but I was
we asked a lot of folks to be here at 1. We didn't know how quickly or not the schedule's going. So we've got a number of folks here.
Okay, because you're at 3:50.
Right. Yeah, and we'll get them in as soon as we can. Yeah,
okay.
We've asked a lot of folks to come at 1, not known.
Yes,
yes, please. Bert?
I'll go through each one of these separate. There's no county cost with any of these amendments or moving from contingency. The first amendment is for the Youth Bureau to create a Youth Bureau Development Outreach Manager. It's for the Brighter Initiatives.
Do you want me to deliberate?
Yeah, if you want to go further, go ahead. Mark can explain more what this position is going to do.
I think over the last year, we've talked a little bit about the Brighter Futures Initiative, which is a grant from community foundations and some other partners to set up a couple of cohorts. It's a 3-year grant. The first year is 20 youth that are at risk of either dropping out of high school, so it's high school completion, or at risk of joining the juvenile justice system. This is separate and apart from Raise the Age. Our first intention was to use the Youth and Family Engagement Coordinator and the Assistant Youth and Family Engagement Coordinator to help do some of these duties. It came back that when we moved them fully into probation, they were fully funded 100% by the Raise the Age revenue, which means their tasks need to stay with Raise the Age. We went back to the grant source and said, you know, can we bring on a position to do this work? And they approved that. So it would be one person basically doing case management for these two cohorts.
And this is
Legislator Donaldson.
It'd be funded through that grant. It's fully funded. It's fully funded. Yes, that's what the amendment is. Yeah. As far as
the 3-year grant, right. The position would go away if the grant goes away.
That sunsets in the. It's in.
I have it in here.
It's
if there's
annotated in the amendment.
Right. Yeah.
Yes,
so
and we will be tracking
ends,
it.
The position ends, no.
Unless other funding can be found. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. You'll see that on the next couple as well.
Okay. Any other questions on this?
The second one is in social services. They were waiting for approval from New York State on Raise the Age. They got the approval, and this is the amendment to the budget. It lists what each kind of the breakdown of the specific expenses are when it comes to the Raise the Age funding. You'll see the on-call pay is increased, computer equipment for a number of tablets. They'll need cell phones. Again, this was all approved by New York State, and it's part of Raise the Age plan. And the professional services, which is the biggest expense, is broken out by the different programs listed on the amendment.
Let me ask you,
Right now, working with personnel, they have classified it. It could be competitive exempt. It's not a civil service title. So right now, it's proposed. In terms of the Youth Bureau, it's proposed exempt. Again, New York State's going to make that call.
All right. And then the social services.
There's no positions here, Dave. This is just on-call pay for additional out-of-office hours when it comes to the Raise the Age funding.
I was looking at it cross-eyed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. 100%. And again, social services was just waiting for approval before they amended the budget. Good to go on. Next. The next one is basically we're just reassigning two positions. One was the risk officer, which we thought the best fit would be in insurance, the insurance department. We feel it's a better fit in the health department because of the corporate compliance and can provide more assisting the health department more in their corporate compliance kind of duties and tasks through the health department rather than just in the insurance department. We're moving a position from the health department. The accountant can help insurance with workers' comp claims and such in terms of the accounting part of that.
That's not the explanation we got from the department head yesterday. It was a lot of, we were going to be taking data. It was two or three different things by the end of the meeting, but we were already compiling data between a firm that we contract with and ourselves. And this accountant, amongst other things, was mainly going to be used to create trainings to avoid costly accidents. That was explained yesterday. We can listen to the laws of the state.
But if I could
right.
jump in. So what the accountant position is going to do is take work off of Dorraine,
right.
who is the insurance officer, so she can focus more on the trainings. This risk compliance officer, having compliance in health, it's going to sit in the fiscal unit of health. I was just sitting with Dr. Smith this morning, and I know Legislative Archer has talked about succession planning. The individual who is the risk compliance officer has health comptroller experience in the past on the resume, and that fiscal unit in the next few years we'll be looking at some retirees, so having the higher level fiscal person as opposed to the accountant makes more sense, and having that corporate compliance role sit in health as opposed to insurance. Now also moving the accountant position from health to insurance so that they can do those claims-based work and work inside the financial system.
Which would free up
Dorraine
to do a lot of the training.
It's a much better explanation than we heard yesterday, and I would have loved that from the department head that's going to be implementing what you're talking about doing. We got three different explanations of what this person is going
to
do.
Oh, well, I think in fairness to her, she was just notified on Friday of the change, and I think she was still she admitted afterwards that she was still trying to get her arms around how it was all going to work. So I think in fairness,
she is going to be the one that are creating these trainings and everything else, and I was just wondering, look, with fringe benefits, you're talking $80,000 or $90,000 a year, and there are firms that specialize in taking the data, identifying the problems, and coming up with the actual trainings and helping us implement those trainings. It'd be a heck of a lot cheaper than $90,000 a year, and I'm surprised that we haven't explored that.
If it were, I think that would be before us.
I have seen nothing about how they explored that, but if you're telling me that I've seen 50, 60 of these outside audits over the past couple of years, and they're all between $20,000 and $50,000 a year, and we wouldn't even be doing this yearly. I'm just saying, I would have appreciated as we talk about moving towards privatizing and doing left and right, whether it's DPW, finance, we're doing a lot of it. New World, all these things, they're savings. Mm-hmm. So I would have loved some actual an exploratory, some proof of exploration into what kind of firms do this, how much they cost before we went to create another position.
We're not creating a position. This is just moving a position that's already in the health department.
It's
correcting. Right.
It's realigning.
Yeah, we're not creating a new position.
Well, it's realigning headcount.
It's a position in the department that's going to cost the county $90,000 a year that wasn't there before.
No, it has been. It's just moving it from one department to another.
Exactly.
But it's still in the general fund.
It just grew one position.
The department did, but it was growing anyway in the budget process.
Which is a big issue. Look, I don't want to have a big debate, but every time we come up with a position that could be moved or dissolved, right? That was the whole point of the charter. We were going to have a smaller, more efficient government. And now all I see is every time there's an opportunity to maybe do away with the position or privatize it, we find a place to move that person.
We're good. Would you like me to move on? Sure. The first Office of Aging is a new grant they applied during the summer, and it was approved by the state. It's the Age Friendly Grant. This is a civil service position. It's a grade 14. The state is covering the funding for this position. I will let you know the grant is for 2 years. OFA does know this, and they're going to look for additional funding to cover the position forward.
But if that funding is not found, it will be removed.
Right. Which
is it stated the same way?
Yeah.
It's resolution? I used the resolution language we've used before on the amendments.
Check the box. The last sentence in the box.
Well, I see that.
It's the language that was used in the resolutions we've done prior.
Yeah, we're going to track them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could you just go over the program? No, this
would be a new position for what the grant covers is, and I'm reading it from OFA, to oversee, like, all, they're going to look at all health insurance policies throughout the county and how it affects seniors, and they're going to reach out to community seniors and community partners to refine and implement this Friendly Action grant. Again, this is through a state grant. So I can provide you, you know, there's a list of things that this position is required. I can provide that. It's part of the grant. There was a plan. But they're going to kind of continue this position for some other, they're going to find an additional grant potentially to see what this position could do. That's what they've been kind of.
We're putting somebody into our insurance company, our insurance department, who is basically an actuary.
But this is for seniors. This is, you know, again, an age-friendly grant by the state.
This senior-friendly action plan is being funded by the state to promote health in all that we do towards seniors. So one big portion of this, too, is to expand our programming at the Senior Hub, which is in the town of Ulster. On top of that, it is just focusing on health, again, in all we do. And so, again, if they don't find another revenue source that makes sense, this position will go away.
And the last amendment is aging. I know the legislature approved, I think it was during the summer, the unmet need grant for aging, where we put money in professional services for personal home care aides. The problem they're having is the agencies aren't able to hire folks for the personal care services. So, you know, creating these two positions through the county may benefit OFA in getting that work done. Their civil service titles, again, these titles that are grade 4, this is through personnel established the grade. This is, again, another, the unmet need grant, so it is covered. I believe the unmet need grant was at least 3 years.
Yes.
I think it's for 3 years. Again, that language is if the grant is not there, these positions would go away.
And the focus is to lower our waiting list, which is right. Currently out there for these type of services.
Chair Bartels.
So it says that that there aren't enough people, aides, able to pick up clients due to low Medicaid reimbursement rates.
This is the agency that we're trying to hire through.
No. So you're the lack of aides is due to the reimbursement rate?
By New York State, correct.
So what do they get paid? Do we know what they get paid?
I'd have to look at the contracts to see if what they get paid.
So initially we were using an agency to contract out these services. All of those agencies are having a hard time finding these personal care aides because of the Medicaid, which is a federal, as opposed to state, although done through the state. Because of the reimbursement rates that go to the agencies. So we have unmet needs throughout the county, especially in the outskirts where people need to drive out and go get them. This grant is entitled to remove people off that waiting list and provide those services directly through county employees. So we're not worried about the Medicaid, right.
Unfortunately, the rate I think they're paying isn't enough for them to hire people, the agencies.
Yeah, I mean, I would just like eventually to know what the backup is on what is the rate they're paying and what the cut these agencies are taking, because
especially with the benefits,
in terms of this is something where the positions get eliminated like the other things when the fundings, they no longer exist. Mm-hmm. But if we have an unmet need, if we have a waiting list of clients that
may
that
need to
need
keep
assistance,
it.
I feel like it's something we need to figure out an alternative way of addressing as a more permanent solution. So we probably should dig deep into, you know, the costs that currently that these people are being paid and the cut these agencies are taking, and is there a long-term creative solution to address it? Because I would expect we're going to continue to have a long waiting list if we
and a hard time finding.
Especially senior population growing.
Yeah. Legislator Donaldson?
Now, these are basically the ones that are eligible for this, are those people that are not on Medicaid, but are not wealthy enough to be able to hire their own.
What's a Medicaid reimbursement rate?
The Medicaid reimbursement
is to the agency.
Drives the salary item rate. When he said Medicaid reimbursement rate, what he's pointing out is because the Medicaid reimbursement rate is so low, it's hard for those other agencies
to address it.
They have it with Medicaid. They have them. But the idea of trying to get somebody that is not being paid for the Medicaid, the ones that are a little above that, it's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this rate here, it looks like you're going to be paying them, like, $15.85 or something like that an hour.
I don't have it. It's about $16, I think.
On the Medicaid, I think you're probably paid about
$12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but doesn't the agency
have $15.85? You're making more than
$16. Not with the benefits, though. In terms of these would be benefit.
Mm-hmm. We have one conversation, please.
Over the waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have one conversation?
I can get that number. I don't have the numbers. Mark, do you know the waiting list number for this?
No, I get that number from the director.
It keeps on getting larger.
I don't have a number.
It's nice that they're at least paying for the people that are going to run there, because as Tracy points out, I really don't see this going away.
Yeah.
It's going to get worse, not going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do not see changes that are in the federal government coming down that actually creates the idea that they're going to be paid better. So as a result, I mean, what do? I mean, unless you have that kind of passion, I mean, you can flip burgers for $15 an hour. Why do you want to go in and
do this
for 11 or 12?
Mm-hmm.
People think about that. You know, not have the headaches, not have the problems that, you know, may come with being a home health aide. So I wish there was a better solution. I wish there was a long-term solution.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that we could actually work towards one, but we can't. The reason we can't is we're being controlled by the federal and state government
mm-hmm.
on what we can
what you can do. Mm-hmm.
Or we could spend a hell of a lot of money and take care of it.
Right. Yep.
Legislator Jarantine, did you have a question?
Basically, I mean, the private companies are doing this, providing the service. You're saying that there's a gap of the people that they can't get reimbursed on a certain level that they are not providing, and we're going to take that slack up and actually provide that service to these people.
Correct, yeah.
But what about, how are we going to, what guidelines are we going to use that we don't go beyond a certain level that we're going to take people away from the private sector? Because
But they can't provide it now. That's why we have a waiting list.
They can't provide on the lower end because we're not getting compensated.
Mm-hmm.
They can provide the upper end.
Sure.
And they do that.
Right.
So they're going to pick and choose which ones they have.
But they're under contract with us to provide service, not for the upper end, for those who qualify for us.
Understand. Okay. So they're going to provide that service.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going to do jointly provide that additional service to that point?
Yeah, take care of the waiting list. Correct.
Mm-hmm. So why won't we just consider paying them more to just take that service over with more employees?
Are they going to fund it to their employees? I mean, we could just
pay.
I mean, that would be my question. We just provide them money. Are they going to turn it to their employees?
We provide so many clients to do that.
I know one of the issues is we're not able to reach with the agencies. They don't go to all parts of the county either. By having these positions,
yeah,
we'll be able to.
Agencies that do it in Ulster County,
but they don't touch every corner of the county either.
Right. I don't know about that. I mean, they come all the way south.
The problem is travel. You think
right.
about that. If somebody's up in Pine Hill,
mm-hmm.
in some of these areas, if they don't have a nurse, you know, an aide like this near that area, who's going to want? I'm not
right.
going to want to drive up to
yep.
Pine Hill and then get paid $12 an hour to drive to Pine Hill and that.
But
what happens is, just so you know, the way it's set up, like my mother, for an example, she gets 6 hours a day. She gets 3 in the morning and 3 in late afternoon. Who's going to want to do that? Who's going to want to, she lives in Pine Hill, who's going to want to go to Pine Hill work for 3 hours, drive back home, work, stay there, or whatever, and come back 3 hours later to put your other three in, because that's the way they do it.
You missed my point, Dave. My point is that if you're providing a service that private companies already provide, they're not providing that service because they're not getting compensated on the lower end. I'm saying, why can't we negotiate with these private companies? They already have in-house people. They have the experience. We have to go through this whole training period. And they, I mean, out of their whole area, they do cover, as far as I know, most of the county, 90% of the county, if not 100%.
Now, we did try this when you guys passed the resolution. I think it was in July to give the agents. They just can't get to these folks. That's why we're repurposing that grant to get these two positions on there.
If you're going to guarantee compensation to them, they might consider it.
Again, I go back to, are they going to pay their aides the more money? You don't know. Because that's the one thing, they're unable to hire the aides to do the work.
Well, why can't we stipulate that this is contract, you have to pay the employees, they have to be minimum $15 an hour, state law.
It's not this year.
That's not it.
Not yet.
Something what is it, $12.80 or something like that?
Again, the benefits too, though.
I'm just saying, why can't we consider doing something joint venture with the private entities that are doing it today instead of a dollar amount of what they have to pay their employees?
We've tried. Yeah. I mean, as mm-hmm. Bert said, and it's not just
since July.
It's been an ongoing issue. And remember, our director of OFA is coming from Always There, which was one of these providers, and it's been an ongoing issue for the last couple of years there and at the other agencies as well, hiring and retaining staff. We can hire two staff and go through much of our waiting list. If we were to take this revenue and just put it in professional services and divvy it out through the various agencies,
we wouldn't be able
that
to spend it.
Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to hire two staff that can get rid of that waiting list. And like, we don't have control of the contract agencies to just say you must do this with this additional funds.
Well, I don't think we contract up to do that. Number one, and number two, even providing this service, I'm still not convinced that you're going to be able to provide the services you're trying to get the majority of people throughout Ulster County.
But one issue, too, though, is, you know, this state funding only lasts a certain amount of time. We may, going through the agencies, we won't be able to spend it. So we're leaving money on the table, too.
Chair Bartels.
I mean, I think it's, I definitely would like to follow up and get a better understanding mm-hmm. of what the needs and the numbers are and what the, and, you know, what the Medicaid reimbursement rates are and what these agencies are typically paying their employees. I mean, the thing is, like, an agency is a middleman. They're taking a cut, not necessarily of Medicaid, but they're taking, in order for them to work, they're taking some of the money. So I think we probably should be thinking about long-term solutions. We're always going to need these agencies, but I definitely think with our aging population and the importance of this need, because what these, I mean, my understanding is what these services allow, at least from my experience of them through family members, is for family members, people to stay in their homes longer, which is less of a cost, you know, both to families and to the county, ultimately, depending on how it plays out. So I think it's a good stopgap, but I think we all, mm-hmm. I'm assuming we're also looking for mm-hmm. long-term solutions.
I'm
just going to go back for 1 second. You guys
okay.
done with
so oh, on a, you mean, you're, a totally mo- you're on a different topic.
One what we already talked.
Oh, okay. Before
yeah, so
we
I'll
do
I'll
that,
wait.
Yeah. Before we do that, there's a lot of volunteer services out in our communities
mm-hmm.
that are working to keep people aging in place, and I think one of the groups is called Aging in Place
mm-hmm.
out of Woodstock, right? Are we partnering with some of these
I know
volunteer
we have volunteer
service?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we
I mean, so we
Meals
each,
on Wheels stuff.
Not every
yeah.
town, but most
mm-hmm.
of the towns have a staying in place group. I know
mm-hmm.
New Paltz has an active one. Kingston
mm-hmm.
has an active group. Woodstock, like you said, and we work with those groups on a regular basis. The directors go out,
mm-hmm.
meet with them, and try to work with them. The one thing I did want to add about these two positions is that they are the reason they're the homemakers and not considered personal care aide
They don't dress the people. They do things like certain dishes right. and housekeeping okay. type
not
work
personal,
to
not
help
personal
keep
care.
Them in their house.
Yeah.
They're not the personal care aides,
yeah.
but.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Joe, you had a question?
Yeah. So we had just talked about insurance and that physician. We had a quick debate on whether it was a new position or not. Can you walk me through where that position is coming from? Because I'm under the
sure.
impression yeah. that we actually started by moving a position from ACE.
Yes, that's what the risk compliance officer is.
That position kind of filled it and then moved it over.
The deputy director of ACE right now
yeah.
is filled. That person in the budget was going to be moved to insurance as the risk compliance officer.
Yeah.
What we're doing with that same person position is moving it to the health department. The health department accountant already exists. We're moving that to insurance. That's what that amendment's doing.
This budget amendment does not increase headcount.
Yes.
The budget.
But it's, again, not that position.
Right. So
that's the new position is in innovation.
Correct.
So by moving all these positions around, we still have an extra position.
You do. Correct. Correct.
And so you see what I'm saying?
No, with you. But I'm just giving the specifics. It wasn't this position. The deputy of innovation is a new position.
Yeah, but okay.
Pick one.
And it's not this amendment. I get what you're saying, too. Headcount
is up one if you compare all the. You're
up one.
And this department's getting someone, an extra staff. So, I thought it was pretty fair to say, you know, but the way. Okay.
Just the way they're counting it and the way they're representing
we
it.
We have
here.
An extra staff in the county.
Yes. In innovation.
And I thought more
I think when I was asked for new positions,
staff,
I listened
the,
to Debbie.
The new position, the department that's getting a new position, but we did. You know, I thought we could have used that kind of language initially.
But we got to the bottom of it, so now we know.
Yeah, it shouldn't take this to get
I hear
but I wasn't asked that question.
I hear you.
I can't find that background.
There was four, right?
There was four in ACE?
Yes, four full-timers and a part-timer.
And a part-timer?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of those positions moved to finance.
Yes.
And the other two are still in innovation. The one new one. And that other one was moved to insurance.
You say still in innovation, but innovation is different than ACE.
Same division.
Yeah.
Different responsibilities.
Right.
They are, sir.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right, that was it for you?
Yep, thanks, Lynn. Thank you.
Okay. D&H Canal. Legislator Donaldson, do you want to say anything before Mr. Merchant gets started? He's the historian for the D&H.
No, we talked about the thing in the committee, and they're doing a massive amount of reconstruction, and the grant is meant for them to use our money towards matching funds, local matching.
Hello, Bill.
How you doing, Lynn? Thank you very much for... Is that on? There we go. Thank you very much, the D&H Canal Historical Society appreciates you considering this request. You may know that back in 2015, Open Space Institute, New York State Department of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation granted us $800,000 that resulted in us purchasing the 1797 Depew Tavern, the Depew Canal House as a new home for our museum. We made that purchase back in December of 2015, and we've since then the society has changed dramatically. It's become more professional, and we are now working on plans to create both a visitor center and a new museum in that facility. As you probably all know, tourism is Ulster County's largest industry still, I think. And cultural tourists, by the way, the people that come to my facility, spend two point seven times more than your average your average tourist. So we're really excited by we our preliminary research, we'll get a minimum of 10,000 to 15,000 people to the visitor center part of our building. This will enable us to be a full-time museum because it'll help support our mission telling the story of the D&H Canal. I assume that our legislators know about the D&H Canal, a very important 19th century industrial transportation network, but it really transformed the Roundout Valley. It fueled the Industrial Revolution. It's a really important American story that not enough people know, and our real mission is to tell that story. But to do that, we have to get people in the door, and thus we have the plan for the for a visitor center as well. This money would go towards planning of the exhibits. We're funding, we're in multiple funding sources. As you probably all know, they'd like to see the public and private partnerships. We did just met a $100,000 challenge grant from the largest private funder of historic preservation in America, I believe, the Thompson Family Fund. But we still we're still at a shortfall. We think we have to raise $1 million in the next 2 years to completely see this vision through. I believe our request is for $20,000 that would help us in our exhibits design phase, which we're about halfway through now.
Any questions?
I guess I have to ask the question. I love museums, and I think this part of tourism is what really brings people into the area. But the concern that's always been raised when we do any funding is about putting money into brick and mortar. So at what phase are you? Is this a conceptual stage? Are you actually looking for this to go towards building supplies, or is this to implement a program?
This money would be towards an ongoing exhibits design team. We've engaged Ferwerda Associates. We've already funded them to the tune of, I think it's $50,000, in the planning stages of both. I think the specific ask is for the outdoor elements. We want to have something bold in front of the building to bring people into the facility. So it's planning for that. We've been firing on multiple sources.
And connecting the trails and providing.
This visitor center will be a trails interpretation. That there's a many D&H related trails. Sullivan in Orange County actually own them completely, and Sullivan does a wonderful job. Unfortunately, here in Ulster, we don't own the entire bed. And there's some wonderful sections in private hands. We'd love to see eventually open to the public. What we plan to do is celebrate all the local cultural institutions. My friends at the Maritime Museum, for instance, you'll hear from a little later, as well as the trail systems. We've got Open Space as our partner, both in the acquisition, but also they'll be partnering, helping us design the visitor center. So it's you know, we're getting funding for all sorts of stuff. You know, this is we've just did a list. We've gotten, I think it's 14 grants in the last 3 years for a total of some $150,000, I believe.
Legislator Donaldson.
Yes. This would help us meet challenge grants. A lot of the public funding, is, as you all know, are 50-50.
50-50 match.
Yeah. We've already expended about. We've expended $250,000 just on the roof, the north addition, just the bricks and mortar. We're now looking into funding also the HVAC and electric. It needs everything, you know. It's a great old building, though, and we're really fortunate that the public got it. It's probably in the top fraction of a percent as far as historical integrity. You won't find a 1797 building with this degree of historical integrity anywhere. And its importance to both the county and this important story can't be overstated. It's really a great building, and yes, thank you. I feel that way. But
any other questions? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
All right. We have we have the Maritime Museum and James Sperry or Bob Bernhaus.
Bob Bernhaus.
Nice to meet you, Bob.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
So I'm here to ask you all to help the Hudson River Maritime Museum make a $500,000 investment in the Roundout and into Ulster County tourism. I gave you a quick set of sheets, and I just want to walk you through them quickly. They said 5 minutes, and I will try to get you guys out of here sometime tonight. This shows our gross revenues from 2005 until 2018. Basically, you see for a number of years, our budget was right around the neighborhood of $200,000 to $250,000. We were very much a mom-and-pop museum, very blue-collar, a lot of people giving their time and their energies to the museum, but not really a professional museum organization. That changed in 2015. We purchased 86 Rondout Landing and opened a wooden boat school. And with the boat school also came boat restoration. And now our budget is right around $1 million. And so $250,000 to $1 million, that shows you the kind of work that's being done down there and the investment we're making in Ulster County tourism. A few notes. We are the highest rated in TripAdvisor and Google for tourism destination in the county. Our museum attracts about 32,000 visitors a year, and that includes a collection and preservation of important archival materials. We have about 20,000 artifacts, photographs, and historic documents, and many of those are now being done digitized and put online. We have highly regarded exhibits. Since 2016, we have been changing our exhibits annually, so it is not the same four musty rooms I've heard it described as, but every year we put out brand new exhibits. The Clearwater is at our place in the winter. It's their winter home port, and they spend a lot of time at our docks. We all know Matilda, the large steam tug out in front of our building, and we've been doing heritage and craft building restoration demonstrations. And this year, with the purchase of a 100% solar-powered tour boat that was built in Ulster County by our shipwrights, we now have opened up lighthouse trips, not only to our lighthouse at the Rondout, but also to the Esopus Meadows Lighthouse. So we think we make Ulster County and Kingston a better, more interesting and desirable place to live, work, and visit. Our grounds are open as a public park year-round, and we see people going with their dogs and running and just sitting on a park bench and looking at the water every single day. We are now a four-season attraction. We no longer are a seasonal museum. We are open year-round. We believe that, and our restaurants, which are very generous to us when we're having events, tell us that we're bringing more and more business down to the Rondout and to the area. We believe we've contributed over 40 years of anchoring the waterfront to higher property values and rents and higher tax receipts. I often say if this was an economic development story, we'd see it on the Freeman, you know, about what a great job that the county's infusion of money has done at our docks. So with the boat school, we now have a 32% increase in cumulative revenue growth. Our revenue it was about $185,000 in 2006, and now we're right around $1 million. And we're right now going through our budget for 2020, and it will be in the neighborhood of $1 million. We had full-time employees in 2006 were two. And that included, and then including restoration staff, we're now up to 16. So we're, and they all are paid a living wage. All right, that's something that we do. The other thing that's important to note is we are Ulster County's and the City of Kingston's cruise ship terminal. I mean, there's when they put in the Judge Lauren Bridge, the engineers made it short. So the boats can't get underneath it, so they have to stop at our docks in order to embark folks. We were asking right now for you to make that investment. We think it'll be a good investment. Last year we applied for a CFA grant from Parks, and we were successful. We asked for $500,000, they gave us $430,000. That represents a significant investment we want to make to our campus. We're going to improve energy efficiencies and heating and cooling systems. We're going to add additional solar capacity to the wooden boat school. We're going to enhance the visitor experience, including walkway improvements, benches, landscaping, recycling containers, hydration stations. We're going to integrate connections to Kingston's adjacent Green Line and Empire State Trail, improve the facade, grounds, and streetscape along the Strand, including adjacent trolley tracks and parking. We're going to install hardware to provide public Wi-Fi for the folks who are down there on the waterfront. And lastly, we were part of the wayfinding project that the Ulster County did with the City of Kingston, and we're going to try to build kiosks and signage on our property to help direct visitors and orient and navigate and appreciate the Kingston waterfront and the city of Kingston. There are three images that our artists put together of what our improvements will look like. You can take a look. There will be significant safety improvements along the tracks. If you ever walk there now, they're very uneven. There's also a drainage problem. The only drainage is through the bricks. And that's a problem. And so we're working with the city to receive an easement so that we can do some improvements on that property going forward. There'll also be bollards to keep cars out of the area, so nobody's going to drive down there and think it's a roadway, which has happened several times with people walking back and forth. And the last is one of my favorite pictures. It says Port of Call. It's a picture of one of our cruise ships that dock. That's the Constitution. It's a brand new ship by American Cruise Lines. It's a world-class cruise line. They're now coming in. We had 26 visits. That particular ship, I think, was there about 9 times this season, and about 195 people on board. And not only do they come ashore, but the services such as diesel fuel, scavenging, water, and food for the passengers are all purchased in Ulster County. So we think we've done a pretty good job. We got a lot more to do, but we have a board that's willing to take risks and a board that really works hard. So thank you for your time, Mr. Donaldson.
Yes, I'm very impressed with the museum. I've been in there a few times recently, and in fact, I think it's one of the
Thank you.
The walkways and things of that nature. Now, my understanding is Grant would also help you
It's the match. We have to come up with approximately $108,000 match to that $430,000, and we're asking for $30,000 a year for 3 years. So this is an annual ask, but that's what we're looking for. That'll help us get the work done.
Well, we got it in for 20 years, but
okay, well.
It's in here for 30. It's in here for 30. But we cannot commit for.
I understand. It's an annual
years.
Ask. I understand it's an annual ask.
Legislator guaranteed.
No, I'm sorry. They did put it in, but I got to make stuff with the DNH.
I just want to commend you on what you have done down there. Very big asset to Ulster County. You commended you and your board for your hard efforts. But there again, going back to Legislator Archer, we cannot commit for 3 years like you have written in your project here.
I'll become your new best friend. I'll be back every year for the next 3 years.
Legislator Malone.
You may have mentioned it. I missed the first couple minutes, but some of those big ships that are coming in would not be able to come down and dock without you guys.
That is correct.
I know people that volunteer for you. I love what you're doing, and I think you're a really good example of how it's supposed to work. You've done exactly what you said you're going to do, and with the county funds, and I love it down there. And you're actually providing quantifiable and tangible benefit to the local economy, which is not always easy to literally see. I like it.
Thank you. I'll tell the staff.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Okay. Legislator Donaldson just left. Family of Woodstock. Is there someone here representing them? So I guess we'll wait for Legislative Donaldson to come back. Let's see, what do we have? Well, they're all Legislator Thompson. Laura, we could. Oh, there we go. Oh, Arkell, I am so sorry. Yes, Anthony. I forgot there. Please forgive me.
No problem. So, hello. Thank you for having me and taking time to consider our Arkell's projects. Arkell is the resource center for accessible living, and we are the Ulster County Independent Living Center chartered by the state. We provide options for individuals who have disabilities, whether they be young children who need assistance getting the advocacy that they need in school, all the way up the ladder to 90-year-old individuals who just want to stay home and not be landing up in the nursing home. As you all know, it is less expensive to keep people living at home and staying in place. Some of them are dechartering this year due to lack of funding. So there's everything that we can do to keep people living in the community, and we're working on a program that we came to you with for employment. As you know, employment is at an all-time high. They can't get staff. They can't get staff for PCAs. We have an employment program that helps individuals with disabilities that would otherwise be unemployable to become employable. We partner with the Office of Persons with Developmental Disabilities, and we partner with the Office for Adult Continuing Cooperative Educational Services to provide opportunities for individuals who cannot go to work at this current time but should be. We are in the process of trying to open up an employment center with not your usual flair that other agencies do, where it's just pushed through. We always want to add in the independent and choice option, not the jobs that you want the individuals to have, but the jobs that the individuals would like to work at. And that's what an independent living center is all about. So we have a building that we own, and we are going to be expanding into it to provide workshop space for educational opportunities, classrooms. We're combining in our durable loan closet, which most of you have heard of, into this and creating it into a retail-ish looking type of space so that we can have the individuals in our pre-voc, which is a pre-vocational educational opportunity for individuals who don't even understand that you have to get up every morning at the same time to go to work. Like, why? And you mean I have to shower every day? Like, why do I have to shower every day? So this is these are the individuals that we're working with in the pre-vocational program. And if we can help them gain these skills by utilizing in opportunities for volunteers, they work in programs across the county for free, volunteer internship type opportunities. And we are also going to now use them in our loan closet to do the retail piece that people don't want to let them work. Individual businesses don't want to let them work yet. They're not at that skill level yet. But we're going to use them internally. So having all of these additional opportunities, we are looking for some funding to help us offset the staff support costs of having these opportunities. And that's what I'm here for today. I know that I looked at that agenda, and God love you all, because you're not going home tonight. So I don't want to take up much more of your time, but that is the gist of what we're doing. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a comment. I mean, we do have RCAL come in. The program that we run out in the New Paltz could not be run without volunteers. And, you know, they're reliable. So as Anthony had said, they are expected to come in and work as if it was a paid job. Also, I met somebody, I mean, because they're constantly out there hustling, you know, trying to, you know, incorporate your clients into the business world. So when I was out at an Elster Mixer last night, somebody from RCAL was out there. This is a very good program. It's also helping with a need. At New Paltz, we also have a very small loan closet, and we just can't put in the time that's really needed, and yet we get a lot of phone calls. You know, do we have wheelchairs? Do we have... So they're providing, you know, not just a small service, but basically universally for Ulster County. And as far as I know, you're the only loan closet, except for our modest one, in the county.
We are the only one of our caliber. There are a couple little fire departments that have crutches, and some walkers, but we can get some better equipment available, and we've been able to get some funding periodically to buy things like lift chairs and scooters and recliners and help individuals in the community. Again, everything that we do
is about increasing people's independence and choice for individuals with disabilities. It's sad sometimes. I talk to people. We've been in Ulster County for 35 years, and I get an awful lot of Arkawan, Arkabu. But at this point now, we've grown from just our independent living core to having 14 different programs. We've grown from 4 people in a little box on Broadway to we employ almost 80 individuals at this time. And we've grown our budget from like $47,000 back in the 80s. And we went all the way to $2.4 million for a little while, but with the state realignment of care coordination, we've shrunk back down to $1.7 million. But we're holding on, and we didn't have to lay off anybody. And so any little bit helps, because we're trying to grow the community just like everybody else. And again, in a time where you can't hire PCAs, we can't hire ComEd employees, we can't help. I have 200 hours a week worth of ComEd services that I cannot provide on my waiting list because I can't get services, like I can't get individuals to work either. It's the same kind of thing as the PCA program. So the more individuals we can get who would love to work, to be able to work, then it helps solve a lot of our problems all at once. Anybody else?
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
So Dave, we're going to go back to the family of Woodstock.
Yes.
You want
to? That's a simple situation. Family Woodstock does the visitations, which they're mandated basically by the state that we go through them, and it saves us a hell of a lot of money by having Family Woodstock do this because they have somebody that's already on staff. But what has happened is the cost of doing it because of the increase in the amount of visitations, which we all do want, as Warren is this need, and so they came before us and pointed that out, that it was because of the increase in visitations and the cost of actually holding that.
Thank you. Any questions?
So this is for non-custodial parents?
Yeah. Yeah, so we, in other words, there's supervised visitations. In other words, if I'm divorced and
I don't mind.
In other words, what's happening if there may be like some serious problems within the family?
Chair Bartels.
So how does this intersect with the contractual money we're already giving to
families? Well, almost all the contractual money with Family Woodstock is contractual with specific programs.
But do we
this
do
this is a specific program.
Do we do this kind of program already?
Yes. Yeah, it's just me.
This is just adding $4,500 to that.
Yeah, we've been doing this for.
So what do we? What is? Can I ask what the county line is currently?
It's not moving locations. It's just staying within the legislature. If the question is like, do we do it with the county exec side as well? Is it a duplication?
It is.
Well, I believe.
They're already.
I think
I'm
so.
Just confused.
Yeah. So did they?
That's what he just said.
In terms of the contractual obligation that we have for supervised visitation with family, already in the budget. Did they ask for $4,500 more and we just didn't give it?
Yes.
Or what?
I don't know that they came to us and asked, so they went to the committee and
they
asked.
They came to the committee to request that. They didn't. I don't know if they went through you or
they
after.
They didn't, which is fine.
So that's what happened.
So why wouldn't they put it in that line?
Well, it's fine, but I think it's kind of strange that Family of Woodstock would work around their normal way of.
No, it's not their normal way. What happened was, this is the first increase of this in quite some time. It's been about 4 or 5 years. And so as a result, because this thing came to that committee, he felt he had to go to the committee, so he went to the committee to do that.
Because what thing came to the committee? Can you explain?
This particular program is part of legislative programs.
Supervised visitation is run through legislative programs?
It has in the past.
It has, yes. Why? I mean, so we have a lot of contracts with family. This one has always been through legislative programs for whatever reason.
Okay, well, what is the whatever reason? That
I think
seems
it was
very
because
strange.
It was started by somebody. It was started by a resolution from the legislature.
would be a part of, be through social service. It just seems like a weird disconnect that we're running something like that through legislative programs where, you know, we try to put these buckets of expertise, you know, as they relate to committees, and while any one of us can attend any committee, it just seems like the wrong place, and it also, frankly, seems like the wrong place for a family of Woodstock to be going to programs to ask for an increase in a program that has to do with supervised visitation. Yeah, we definitely have to look at it. It just, I don't know. It feels really strange to me to have supervised visitation.
Well, I think we're she's very strange here, so.
That's true, but this is the first one that's jumping out at me as seeming not, like.
I'm not worried about it. I think it's a program that, as you know it, if you know what it is.
I do know what it is.
It's a program that has to be done.
Do we get reimbursement for it?
We pay for it. We might get salary, or do we get reimbursement?
It's through family court, so it's not necessarily through regular social services. I think it's something that we should look at for the 2021 budget. I don't think that is something we should try to move for 2020. But I think that we should follow up through the year and discuss whether this is something that.
Can we put it on a short list of follow up so that it's not a budget time that we're following up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, mostly it's supervised visitation.
Just put it on a list. We have to talk about
what family or whatever the case may be. Visitation has to be supervised, so they go to a site such as family, and that's where they have to visit.
But I mean, is programs, we definitely should look at it for 2021, like if here we are in 20, but it's, are they reporting into programs? What I'm curious about is
yes.
That, so they come during the year and they say how many cases,
whenever
you have that backup?
Yes.
But you have the backup on how many cases they saw last year and how many they're
They do give us an annual packet.
Okay.
Yeah, we have it.
Can we get a copy of that?
Yeah, I can send out their latest one.
Yeah.
We know that everything that we require you before it monthly.
No, that monthly would be over the top.
We have a monthly, we have questions.
I just
see reports maybe twice a year.
We should just talk about it for 2021.
Yeah. All right. Would you like to talk about the Cornell package, Dave?
Oh yeah. Cornell,
you've got the next several.
keep it going.
You keep it going, Dave.
They've requested a significant amount more than that. They wanted to add a position. Or in other words, they were looking at well, not in a position, but a program, because we don't pay for their people, we pay for the programs, to monitor all the waterways like they do for the DEP. But we felt that should have been something that they would have negotiated with the county executive to make sure, in other words, that they understand what it was, that they have the manpower to be able to check that type of thing out. They did request some money because of operating costs and such like that. And as most of you know, whatever we give them, they leverage the similar amounts from the state and the federal government. That's the way this cooperative is funded. It's sort of a one-third type of thing. So that's what they requested a significant amount more than that. They actually requested more than that for the added cost that it was, but we decided that if we looked at the information that they had, we decided that we would recommend the $12,000.
Yeah, some of the work that they were requesting to be funded was duplicative of a new position that we're adding to Department of the Environment.
Ah, and also there's overlay with soil and water.
Right.
Some of what they're suggesting.
Any other questions? All right, Dave, you want to talk about...
Actually, I do with their budget in general. Do they go out and get grants? I mean, are they pretty good?
They leverage...
Probably the one organization gets
because, you know, Orange County, Dutchess County, they don't get input at all from the county, it was Dutchess. So
they leverage, in other words, almost all of their expenditures I'll tell you what, if you want somebody to be able to do economic development, these are, if you look at the amount of money that we spend and the amount of jobs that are created in Cornell Cooperative, it is far below what it would cost us if you actually, you know, if you take a look at other economic development programs, in other words, how much the jobs that are created by the amount of money that we stuck in. I don't know how they believe, they have like a formula, but I mean, they're pretty remarkable at that. And we do an unbelievable amount of service throughout, particularly the farmers. Farmers depend on them immensely. Sometimes my trouble with them is they venture into some things that are duplicate.
So we keep
an eye on that because we want to make sure that we're not, I don't want to duplicate other services. So, you know, I mean, it makes no sense to me. I'm a heavy duty liberal Democrat, but I'm conservative with the money because I know very well if I can save money here, I can put it into another program somewhere else. That's the way I kind of work.
That's the way you roll, huh, Dave? All right. Can you do Mohonk?
Mohonk, yeah. Well, this was a request that they had. Again, this is another organization that, this was something that was actually Jim DeLong wanted. And it was something that he was pushing to get. They have also spent a great deal of money recently in Credo at the reserve, and they're also doing a lot more education programs. And what where this would do is supplement them in creating more education programs and bringing kids from Allenville and Kingston and municipal centers that are not used to being in this type of wilderness environment, and they bring them together and they do various, they're basically educational programs. Sometimes the schools are now beginning to use them a little more, and what this is helping them, this would help them do the outreach to the schools, it would also help them papers, and sometimes they need to get a little incentive, get a little cussing to be paid for. And then once they add that, then the schools can, and the schools tend to say, okay, yeah, this is a great program. I'm going to start, using it more. So that's what they're attempting to do with this.
Yes.
But just for clarification, it sounds like this program is to go to the schools, not to have the schools go to
No,
home.
They come there.
This says in class.
In class, they do classes right at 30.
Really?
It says a traveling in class.
And it says also outdoor field studies and in class. It's both.
Right.
It's a combination.
Yeah. They come in, but they also, in other words, they come in, usually it's like, I believe it's a follow up.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when they bring in, then they do follow ups with these. But these have been limited because of their own resources.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Laura?
Sorry,
I didn't hear you.
Think of a better place to have a classroom. Mohonk Mountain House, it's all quite amazing. So, yeah.
All right, Dave.
This is the preserve. I just want to clarify that there is there's a difference. I mean, they do have their own facilities, and it is for both in-field study, which will be at the preserve, but in-class outreach as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, if you've gone to that, they've done a lot of work in the preserve. It's a nice building. It's done really well.
Okay. And the next one, rehabilitation training. Dave, that's yours.
I'm spending a lot of money here.
You are. And you were just telling us how conservative you are.
What, are you running for something? I don't know, I guess so. We had a group called Smani that came in and did a presentation They've also talked with the county executive. I got a call from Vin Martello, which I meant to call him back. I mean, I could actually play you back his, it was a message on my machine. Talking about how thrilled he was that we were considering doing this. Vin Martello, everybody knows Vin.
Yeah.
And because he's been involved in the opioid crisis for the last couple of years. And one of the things that he was concerned about is this type of rehabilitation. This group's embodied, we didn't put it in for them because, as Mark will attest to, we want to do, you know, we're going to do this, we got to do it with an RFP. But we can, you know, make the RFP because there's nobody really in New York that's doing this. This is a new program that they're starting to do. And it's catching on in other areas. People are seeing this is the best way for rehabilitation for drug addicts, basically. And so what he does is a lot of it is training trainers. In other words, so the program, it has a rippling effect. And what, you know, so basically it would cost, the way he had it programmed out, it would be about $50,000.
But we're talking about here putting it out to RFP and saying.
So what I'm asking for here is just putting it aside. We'll do the RFP and then we got to do that, something with that. Another aspect is, you know, I had a conversation with the president of the college, and the president of the college has actually started what they did was a contest within all the high schools throughout Ulster County to create posters for rehabilitation, and that's their its target. And with that target, what I'm looking at doing is, I may look at grabbing from some of this or somewhere else later on, but to wrap a bus, you know, that goes either, you know, to the Allenville, particularly the Allenville and Kingston bus, with that poster, whatever the mini poster is throughout Ulster County.
Mark?
So State Oasis is starting to add requirements that these counseling groups have. What Dave was saying was peer-to-peer counseling, so recovering addicts. And Somati is one group that is qualified to do the train the trainer. But we're going to go out to RFP. This is written as RCAL, so I would just ask that be stricken unless it's been fixed, and I just have an old copy.
You may have an old copy. Did you pull an updated copy?
This is what I was given yesterday. So.
Yeah, we've updated.
Okay.
We've updated.
And it's 50, and it's okay. Perfect.
Yeah, there's an updated copy here too, Mark. If you want. Okay. All right.
So this program, because we have awareness, which is a peer-to-peer, but we are looking now going up for an RFP and doing something more that conforms with the Oasis program. So we're training folks to go out. I mean, I understand the concept, but if someone is being trained, they just go out? Is it part of a larger organization? Is it, I mean, I just need a little more.
I know it's a lot of, they run a hotline, at least Somati does, and I don't want to speak directly to that program because who knows, we may, maybe awareness sends in a proposal or others. I also think awareness is focused on alcohol recovery, if I'm right, at least in what they are qualified under Oasis to do and what we contract with them to do. And I think this is more opioid, drug, etc. related services. It's different, I believe, is the intention of Legislative Programs Committee. To focus on the opioid related.
Because I wanted to do this with Ken Martello because he's the guy that is in the opioid.
Yeah, he has the opioid.
All right, if you
didn't know that we're playing his
voicemail.
He left me the voicemail.
Okay, all right. I guess I'll tell staff that thing.
You can let him know. Sorry.
Yeah, Dave, I think we're good.
No,
I think we're good.
But I could just tell you what, you know, like I said.
You told us what he said. We believe you.
He's overly excited about it. I got into my thing. He wants me to call him back, and I didn't get a chance to call him back because I was at meetings until late the night last night.
Yeah, but we believe you. We could call him.
not always believe what they tell you.
I would imagine Ben as the appointed kind of opioid.
Czar.
Yeah. Czar. Not past words, but he would definitely be enthusiastic with any more support. I mean, we're already funding a decent amount in the budget, but yes, this is definitely a program that is above and beyond.
Okay, the next one is Arts Mid Hudson. Dave? Arts Mid Hudson.
Arts Mid Hudson, this is a continuing thing with their course and what we've done. It is, in the past, we've been trying to increase them a little bit each year because we're trying to increase things with the arts. And of course, the way the program reads, the way it works is they actually go out and volunteer to volunteer panels to decide where our money is being granted to, and it's artists that are doing that. We've increased it slightly this year, but we also made sure we put in that increase that it goes specifically for more granting. It is one of the ones that are more, we're paying the administrative end of it more than most of our things that we do. But a lot of it has to do with the because of the outreach that they have to do. I mean, they are in contact with artists throughout the county. They basically are going to coordinate them getting together and actually coordinating programs. So as a result, they looked at some more money, but they also wanted a little more for their employee there, and we, the employees, we helped, we wanted our money going towards the planting.
I see that. Am I reading this correctly? Like 51,000 goes directly to funding artists?
The added 51 will go just towards that granting.
So are they opening an office, or is there an office already in
Canada?
They already have one here. So is this increasing overall staffing expenses?
No. No, that's why we put it in that manner.
Okay.
It's like we've heard the concerns that some people have because of it is, in other words, a lot of the money goes for staffing. But it's like, you know, education. How do you fund education? You know, 80% of the cost is.
How do they do that? Just from because they're handling multiple counties, right?
They handle Ulster and Dutchess.
Okay.
But actually, they used to get a great deal of more money from Dutchess, but that has changed. The Dutchess has cut back some of theirs. So now they're more. I think they're closer to that even. But that the reason we went to them originally was the idea that they already had the infrastructure intact. They knew what they were doing, and because they did something that, and then we actually created a more unique way of doing it than they did in Dutchess. Because ours is much more driven by the artist. The artists are the ones that decide who is going to get this grant. And these are small grants. They're grants of like each one of them that go out. They do a number of grants, and they're like 2,000. We get a list of them every year. And actually, they usually have an awards little thing there. We just, we add foods, and any of us can go. We normally, I go to it. I normally go to it if I add the time, if it fits in my schedule. But it's very nice. You see the artists come up, and they're unbelievably enthusiastic about getting that $2,000 that they have on their website or doing whatever it may have done.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, the next one is People's Place.
Christine's here. She'll explain to you as you would if anybody.
Would you like to join us up here and just.
If you don't know what People's Place is, you must have been under a rock. Christine has done an unbelievable job in People's Place, and that really a staple of our city, and the county for that matter, the amount of people that she feeds and takes in, and her, this money is going to her program.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. This is the first time we've applied for funding from the Ulster County Legislature, so if I am missing something, please feel free to ask me any questions. We're handing out couple of palm cards that we have. One talks about all the programming that we have, just kind of highlights it, and the other two are about Project Santa, just to give you a feel for what we do. People's Place is the largest food pantry in Ulster County, and we do serve all of Ulster County, so it doesn't matter if you live in Kingston or Highland or Ellenville, we are there to help. We actually work very closely with the Ellenville School District in providing Bag Holiday Hunger, Bag Summer Hunger, and Project Santa and Thanksgiving to the Ellenville school who can't normally get up to the Kingston area. So this grant would be, originally when I applied, it was a little more general, having to do with our children's programming, but we thought maybe we should focus it down a little bit more to programs that center on food security. So we do several different programs that focus on food security. Most well known is obviously the food pantry. We are the largest food pantry, not only in Ulster County, but we're in the top three for all of the food pantries at the Food Bank of Northeastern New York service. So we do have a lot of folks that we help here in Ulster County. October 2nd, we open a community cafe, and the community cafe is one of about 50 to 60 around the country, and the only one that we are aware of in Ulster County. It's been doing extremely well. For the first month that we are open, we gave out over 2,300 meals in the 4 weeks for our initial opening. And if you aren't familiar with the cafe, I implore you to come and dine. There's no charge for anything. There's no suggested donation. Of course, if you come and dine and you feel moved to donate to People's Place, we do have a small discreet donation box available next to the soup. But if not, the real focus of the cafe is to bring community members from all economic backgrounds to dine together, and therefore there will be no stigma attached to anybody coming to dine for food. So some of this money would be used to help support the cafe, the food pantries. We do a backpack program at JFK where every week we provide breakfast, lunch, and snack foods for the children who normally would be receiving free or reduced breakfast and lunch at John F. Kennedy School in Kingston. We also do a Bag Holiday Hunger Program, a Bag Summer Hunger Program, and a Bag Spring Hunger Program. And what that does is that provides breakfast, lunch, and snack foods for kids who would normally receive meals at school. And when school's out, you know, we're all happy when we were children that summer recess was there. But there are a number of kids who are worried about, well, how am I going to eat? And parents, it puts much, much more stress on them. To give you an idea, last year's Bag Summer Hunger Program gave out over 44,000 meals and 44,000 snacks just for the 10-week program from July and August. So we also have a free farm stand. But the money that we would be getting from the legislators would really be focused on the program that we do inside of the building. It would be the cafe, it would be the food pantry, it would be the specialty programs like Bag Holiday Hunger, Bag Summer Hunger, and also our Thanksgiving program, which we are gearing up for right now. As of today, when I left work, we had 1,438 families from around Ulster County registered to receive a Thanksgiving package, which is a turkey and all the things that go along with preparing a Thanksgiving meal at home. You know, and that's so important, and we've gotten multiple cards and letters from families and heads of households that say this was the first opportunity in several years we've been able to have anyone over to our house for the holidays. And some things that you and I may take for granted are extremely important and very uncommon for a lot of folks in our community. So these are all things that we would focus our energies and monies on if we were awarded this from the legislative body.
I just want to commend you and your organization for what you have done over the last 2 to 3 years.
Thank you.
You really, I mean, even beyond that, but the last 2 to 3 years, you have really excelled immensely. And
thank you.
See that? Everything goes to the city of Kingston. You know, but they're gonna, you know, they do outreach beyond the city of Kingston and provide all these services to everybody throughout the county. So
right, it's open to everyone who lives within Ulster County. So it's even though we are located right in the city of Kingston, we definitely serve people from, you know, every single county in the or area within the county. So, you know, like I said, some down in Marlborough and Highland, maybe a few. Yes, yes, we do a free clothing program, and like I said, on the little palm card that was handed out, does have some information, very brief, but if you go to our website, peoplesplaceuc.org, we also have a listing of all of our programs, a little more detail in the numbers that we helped in 2018.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. So, in New Paltz, we're part of and, you know, from talking to Michael Berg, I thought that People's Place already was, too. So
we are.
I'm confused about the funding. You are a separate 501c3, so you People's Place is its own entity. So
correct.
Where does the other funding come from to keep this program running?
Which program?
I would say that the entity itself.
People's Place itself. So if I could answer your first, clarify your first part of the question and then answer the second half. We are a food hub also for Kingston. So in our basement, if you aren't familiar, we are in the old Governor Clinton Market. And when we were fortunate enough to have the credit union say, yes, we'll hold a mortgage for you, that gave us the ability to access the whole building. So we have a full basement, and within our basement we have a walk-in cooler and a walk-in freezer. And we were actually the first food hub in Ulster County, I think, with a project in conjunction that with Michael Berg and several other entities that had applied for funding. So different food pantries within Ulster County, like Angel Food East was just there today. They have a cage which within our walk-in freezer. So does Catholic Charities, Family has one, Point of Praise. So, but to answer your bigger question, where do we get our funding? We get our funding from multiple sources, mostly private. We do several fundraisers throughout the year. We're in the midst of our annual appeal, if anyone would like to make a personal donation. We also have the thrift store, which really is our main economic engine. So obviously everything that we have in the thrift store has been donated by members of our community. And then while some of the clothing we do give away for no charge, people can come twice a year and get free clothing for themselves and people within their household. We also have a free household program. We call it Fresh Starts, where if they're coming in and they need pots and pans and dishes and glasses, etc., we kind of make them a little starter kit to kind of get them going. But the rest of the items we do sell. And it's like your it's a local, not-for-profit thrift store, and all the money that we raise through the thrift store goes to support keeping the doors open. So through private donations, fundraisers, thrift store, and we do apply for a few small grants. Community Foundation of the Hudson Valley have given us grant money in the past. We got a starter grant from Car for a Cause for the cafe, and so that's how we ended up starting the cafe. So there are smaller grants, you know, banks, things like that, sponsorships that we do. But we are a 501c3 independent not-for-profit. We got our 501c3 status in 1988. People's Place actually started in 1972 by brothers as an outreach from Mount St. Alphonsus, but they turned over the operations of People's Place in 1985 to volunteers, and in 1988 they were able to get their 501c3 status.
Any other questions?
Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Dave, it's you again. The library.
giving plenty away here today. The libraries, many of you do know, we used to fund the libraries separately by whatever the size of the library was. In fact, the goal at one point, I remember when Dan Alfonso was here, was to give $1 for every person in the county, $1 to cover those. That was the idea. That's what they felt. But anyway, we took over during a budget crisis, shall we say, and we were cutting everything. We were taking paper clips out of the budget and whatever we could find out. And what happened was the guards were cut, the libraries were cut. But the libraries figured out a way of taking those lemons and turning into lemonade. And what they did was they decided, well, we're not going to take the money individually. We want instead to put the money into, because you get $1,000 to this little library, what good does it really do them? It might do them some good. But instead, we put the money into the Library Association. And that means anybody that has a library card in Ulster County can access the programs that they get, because they get it as an association. So all the libraries can have. I leave an example at my mechanic that is the, he fixes my old truck that I have, and he fixes, some of my family's older vehicles. And what he uses, he keeps up to date by using the library. He goes on and he gets, what's the name of that?
DIY site.
Now, it's a site for car repairs. It's
Blue Book?
No.
Chilton? The manual?
Yes, Chilton.
Manual.
Oh, Chilton.
We have lots of junk cars.
I didn't know you were such an expert.
Look up every single manual online to find out what's maybe the problem with the car. So he doesn't know it himself. But anyway, what has happened is they requested an increase because the programs that they've been, people have been demanding from them has gone up a little bit. So this is to cover that so they can continue with the programs that they like. And what I like about what they do is they readjust every year. Every year they look at it, they run the data, they see what's using the programs, who's not, and then they decide if they're going to keep them. So that is basically what it is. And like I said, if you don't have a library card, I would suggest you get one and start accessing these, because these are some really great programs. If you want to learn Spanish, they have a program in there. You can actually download the app, and you can keep the app right on your phone. The only way you can get it is because you go to the library, it becomes free. If you bought it, it would pay $25.
Okay.
So,
question? Is it a particular library, or is it libraries?
No, it's a library association. So
library association.
Any library card, you go into your library card, you go in and use your library card, you get into the association.
It's their online system.
Yeah, it's basically a two-step thing. You just go into your library, and then from there you go into the association.
Central, right. Okay. All right, so why don't we, March isn't here, so Laura, can we move to fire rescue vehicles?
We could, but the person from the fire training is not here.
Oh, they're
so
not here either. We're ahead of schedule, so.
We are too far.
How about if we take a five-minute break?
Okay.
If we'll do that, if that's okay, everybody can.
Put more money in the meter of the car.
Okay. Do you need change?
I might.
If you do, I have plenty of quarters.
I got one.